Now, the next module is qualified retirement plans. We're just going to take a look at IRAs, 401ks. These are the traditional qualified plans, right? 403bs. We're going to talk about the Roth IRAs. And the reason is because the qualified retirement plan, this is where all of America has been taught to put their money. Right? Savings. Well, number one, it's not a savings. It's an investment. There's a module somewhere on this website, probably in the Learning Center, right, that talks about the difference of savings and investing. Savings versus investing. Qualified retirement plans are investments. That's not a saving. But this is where we've been taught to put our money. And this is where the majority of Americans hold their money, is in a qualified retirement plan or their primary place of residence, and neither one of which are liquid. All right. All qualified plans beg three questions. Number one, are taxes going to go up in the future or are they going to go down? Well, I don't know either. But, and I'm not a gambling man, but I've got a 1913-1040 form here that supports the fact that taxes are going to continue to go up. There's over a 100-year history of increased taxes. Now, I know exemptions, deductions, exclusions, carryovers, all that changes. I get it. But the net amount of dollars that we pay out of our pocket every year continue to go up. And I don't believe it's going to change. Here in 1913, did you know you could earn $20,000 in income without paying any income tax? Then you only had to pay 1% on the money you earned between $20,000 and $50,000 in income. Now, let's think about that for a minute. The equivalent would be about $125,000 in income today before you had to pay taxes. And you know, there are very few people earning $20,000 a year in income in 1913. Right? They just got their toe in the door. And it's grown ever since, and there's no reason to believe that taxes won't continue to go up. They don't have any discipline. They, Congress, right? 535, right, up there in Washington. They have no discipline. We're running a $20 trillion deficit.
And I want to say here that I kind of misspoke. That was a $20 trillion national debt. And it was about a $780 billion annual deficit at that time. Well, here in 2025, the national debt is $37 trillion, right? And over $2 trillion in annual deficit. So, yeah, it's almost a drop-your-pen moment right here. It's not going to change. And if you don't do something about it, who will? And I mean that in love.
They're not going to wake up tomorrow and say, oh, let's find some discipline, quit spending all this money. All right. So when they keep spending money, they got to replace that. Where are they going to get that? All right. Taxation. Or they're going to print money out of thin air. We'll talk about that later as well. The bottom line is, I think taxes are going to continue to go up.
You know, and if I make a comment here, you know dang well that taxes are going to go up and they're going to print more money. They're going to do both, right? And then if you even think about that, if the government can print as much money as they want, when they want, and they have over 100-year history of doing just that, printing money out of thin air, then why in the world do they need your taxes? If they can just print the money that they need, why do they need your personal, your private property? Why do they need that? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's a rhetorical question, but it's a legitimate question. And the main thing that I'm ultimately trying to do on a day in and day out basis is to encourage you to think and expand your thinking. Maybe taxation is more of a societal control. If they can print money out of thin air whenever they want to, and they have a history of doing so, why do they need your money?
The second question is, would you rather pay taxes on the seed or the harvest, a little or a lot? Now, look, if you get a rate of return that's static, right, a 5% rate of return every year, year over year over year over year, it really isn't going to matter whether you pay taxes in the beginning or in the end. You know, if you have a dynamic return where You earn 5% 1 year, 7% the next year, 10% the next year. You lose 3% or 2% this year and so on. It does matter. And then you would want to pay, in that example, you'd want to pay taxes in the beginning, not at the end. The third question that all qualified plans beg is, a dollar worth more today or in the future? All right, well, this is how I demonstrate this question, is when you were a child, how many candy bars could you buy with a dollar? A handful, depending on how old you are. Now, I understand. Well, look, how many candy bars can you buy with a dollar today? You got to go to the dollar store just to get one. Now, look, you all should be eating healthy. All right? Don't buy candy bars. Eat some apples, right? Be good to yourself. But a dollar is always worth more today than in the future. Always worth more today. Okay. So the qualified plans violate all three of those truths. Taxes are going to be higher in the future. You're going to pay tax on a larger amount, the seed versus the harvest concept, if the underlying investment is successful. And then you're going to receive dollars that are, they are of a lesser value at the time of withdrawal compared to the time of contribution. Right? Now look, let's consider the Roth IRA. They're tax-free. All right? They still violate that third principle concerning the value of a dollar, because the dollars that come out in withdrawal in retirement are worth less than the dollars you put in at contribution. And then your income levels potentially phase you out of the ability to even participate in a Roth. Now, I know there's some backdoor conversions that you can do. The Roth conversion, you know, that's a taxable event. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. There's a place for Roth IRAs. But if you're going to grow your money tax-free, why limit yourself to a Roth, right? Then I do a lot of work in real estate. I love real estate. And I love real estate investors and entrepreneurs. You go to some of the real estate meetings, and it's almost like they're talking about Nirvana when they talk about self-directed Roth IRAs. Right? Put your money in a self-directed IRA, make sure it's a Roth, and then you can do all your investments from there. It's like, you would think, really, it's Nirvana, listening to some of them talk. Look, the cost of complying with the regulations, self-dealing, third-party administrators, you know, the hoops that you have to jump through, it may not be worth it. Right? It's just onerous, becoming more and more onerous, complying with the self-directed accounts.
You know, that I'd also say there that, which I didn't mention in the original recording, you know, when it comes time for distributions, your qualified retirement plans, and this doesn't apply to a Roth, it's a traditional qualified plans. You know, when you hit your RMD, the age, which is, I believe they're trying to get it to age 75, and maybe they will, but age 75 before you are required to make a minimum distribution each year, right? I believe it's 72 and a half now. It was age 70 at one time, you know, and which also is another point that I want to make. But you have all of this real estate, right? And let's say you've accumulated, let's say you've accumulated multiple properties and it's producing cash flow and it's doing what it does, but then you have to start taking your RMDs. Yeah, that no problem there, right? And maybe not there. Maybe there won't be a problem. But maybe you've got to start liquidating some of those real estate holdings, right, to even meet your RMD. Oh, and then you're age 75 and you want to manage all that or older. I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent, but it's not the Nirvana, in my humble opinion, that it's presented to be. And then the idea that age 70 and a half was originally, you know, that was the original age that triggered your required minimum distributions, right? They've moved it up to, I believe it's 72 or 73, whatever it is. You can Google just as easy as I can, and they're making an effort to move it to age 75. Well, is that an example of changing the rules or not? And I'm not saying they didn't change the rules for improvement. You know, it might be an improvement of the rules. But if you think that they won't change the rules in the middle of the game, you know, you've not been paying attention to history. Okay, so why are you bringing that up, James? I don't know. You can't contribute to a Roth as currently, you know, and if you make a certain level of income, they're changing the rules currently on the backdoor Roth conversion. Who would be shocked in the big wide world in 10 years or sometime in the unknown future? Maybe it never happens, but who would be shocked if it did happen? Say, oh, you know, that qualified plan, that Roth. Yeah, it's not working out for us. We're either going to raise your taxes or not, or you know what? You're just going to have, you make so much money, or that balance is so large, you got to pay taxes on that. Now, I'm not saying they're going to do that. I'm not a doomsday sayer. I'm an eternal optimist. But if you think the government won't change the rules in the middle of the game, like I said, you've not been a very good student of history. Whether they do it or not, who knows? Not I. I don't know. And then that question can also go, well, James, what if they change the rules with life insurance? I fully expect them to change the rules in life insurance. And, you know, we can talk about that at another time. They've changed the rules on life insurance several times. They did in 2022. They did in 86. They did in 87. They did in 83. They did in 84. So, yeah, I fully expect them to. So is that the end of the world if you're practicing the infinite banking concept? No, it's not. Now, historically, you know, they have grandfathered people in to, you know, up until the point where they change the rules. But it's not always the case.
Now, let's take a closer look at the timeline. In my example, I have a 20-year-old, 19-and-a-half-year-old individual going to work, participating in a qualified plan. So between 19-and-a-half and 59-and-a-half, that 40-year time period, they're effectively locking up or separating themselves from their money. Right? Because if you access money, then you're going to pay a 10% penalty. If you withdraw the money from an IRA or 401k prior to 59-and-a-half, you're going to pay a 10% penalty. And then you're going to pay ordinary income tax on the money. So you're going to lose potentially 30, 45% of that. Now, I understand that you can borrow money from a 401k and a 403b, but you're limited to $50,000 or half of the account value. And then the payback schedule is controlled by someone else, not you. You're going to pay that back over a five-year period. Right? Man, you know, cars, you can spend over $50,000 on a car today, and you're limited to half of the account value, or $50,000. Okay, well, why limit yourself?
You know, and I'd want to say here, too, if you borrow against a 401k, that money comes out of the stops participating in the underlying investment, right? So you have $100,000 in a 401k plan. You want to borrow $50,000, so you borrow the $50,000. You've got to pay back the scheduled interest. The IRS tells you exactly how much you have to pay in interest, and the time period which you have to pay it back was within 5 years, right? That interest does accrue to you directly, right? The interest paid goes into your 401k, but the $50,000 that you borrowed is not participating in the underlying investment, whatever it may be. So you're interrupting the compounding if it exists in the 401k. You're interrupting that compounding. And then just managing the loans, you know, your employer has to do that, and you know, the HR department, you want to go and borrow money, and they've got to do a payroll deduct on the loan repayment. It's a hassle for them. And then the custodians, my point here is I have a lot of have had a lot of clients, still have them, that they stopped offering the loan provision. They got the custodian to change their documents where, and it's all legitimate and legal. They didn't do anything esoteric, but they got it into a position where they had to man a bank teller almost, you know, an employee in the HR department was administering, doing all the paperwork on the loans, you know, so it's not necessarily as rosy as it's presented. Is that capital that is you separated yourself from? There's no question. Can you access to it? Can you get access to it? Yes, you can. But there are consequences to that. And so I just want to point that out. You interrupt the compounding.
Again, now when in my example, once you hit 59 and a half, you enter into this magical 11-year period where you can access all of your money, if you would like, no penalties. All right, you can take a little or a lot, all of it or none of it. No penalties, but you're going to pay 100% ordinary income. It's 100% ordinary income taxable. You're not going to pay 100% taxes. You're going to pay the taxes in your bracket, but everything that comes out is taxable. And then you turn 70 and a half. In my example, I let you live to 100 for that 30-year time period. You're going to make an annual withdrawal. It's called a required minimum distribution. And if you don't make that required minimum distribution, that annual withdrawal, you're going to pay a penalty of 50% of what you should have taken out but did not take out. Whether you want that money or not, Uncle Sam wants it out of that account, right? Because he wants his share. So you're going to pay taxes on it. Then you're going to do something, whatever it is you're going to do with the money anyway. That means over this whole time period, the majority of the time, the owner is in a penalty phase. Now look, 45% of all plans liquidate fully or partially prior to retirement. And that number went up to over 70% in 2009, 10, and 11. Now think about that. Why would anybody put money anywhere with a stated purpose and then take the money out and lose 30 to 40% of it? Putting money into a qualified retirement plan for retirement and then prior to retirement, take the money out and lose 30 to 40% of it. Because life happens, right? Marriage, children, medical, educational, there's moves, loss of jobs. Life happens. Well, once you take it out of that account, then you have interrupted the compounding and you've got to go start all over. In this website, in the Learning Center, on this website, in the Learning Center, there's a module that's called the exponential curve or compounding. Go watch that module because you really don't want to interrupt the compounding if you can avoid it. Okay, I digress. That is a qualified plan, the timeline. Now, the question here is, who is it designed for? That designed for you, your family, your Uncle Sam. You know, 99 out of 100 people get this right. And I know that you're one of the 99. Of course, it's designed for Uncle Sam. Why? It's nothing but a long-term savings account for Uncle Sam. Right? And you're bearing all the risk and paying all the fees. Right? Well, the consumer pays for everything. I get it. Nothing new under the sun there. But now, let's think about this for a minute. Now, all qualified plans violate the law of use, even the Roth. Look, you can... You tie your arm behind your back. Tie your right arm behind your back for 6 months. In the seventh month, untie it and tell me if you can use it. Of course you couldn't use it. It's a law of use. You violated it. Use it or lose it. All right? When you put money into a qualified plan, you give up or greatly restrict the control, use, and liquidity of your money. Most of the time, you, the owner, is in a penalty phase. And of course, you're paying all the fees and assuming all the risk. Now, think about this for a minute. If you have $100,000 in an IRA or a qualified plan of any kind that's traditional, and you're in a 30% tax bracket, how much of that money is yours? 70%. You have 100 in there. You're in the 30% tax bracket. So 30% of that money is Uncle Sam's. Who's paying the fees on Uncle Sam's money over that whole time period? You. Now we're at two foundational concepts. These two truths, you have to be okay with.